Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We're rebroadcast on Sundays at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, except for today. Yes, we're at A2Zen.fm at 3 p.m. Pacific Time Sunday, but we're also going to be, A2Zen is going to air this broadcast first, because the radio broadcast is airing Sunday at 5 p.m. due to, well, I've mentioned it before, ball games on the radio station, and that's okay. We don't mind because we're archived and we let you know where the programs are, who we have on, and if you want more information, you go to richarddugan.com. And as I say, we archive the programs at the radio show page at richarddugan.com. The radio show page. So, a little off schedule this week and for the coming weeks. We might be later on Saturday, could be on Sunday. Just check your local listings or just stay tuned to the radio or stay tuned to the stream or check out the archives. We are going to find you one way or the other, or maybe better yet, you will find us. Well, it's a beautiful final, almost final Saturday. It's second to the last Saturday in October, heading towards a lot of people's favorite day, Halloween or All Hallows Eve. Day after that is the Day of the Dead, as celebrated by most folks here in the Southwest. And a very interesting time of the year, lots of fun things coming up. And we will also be talking in a little bit about some of those things with our astronomical and astrological assignment editor, Beth McDonald. But we're going to jump right into our program today. We're going to talk with one of the hosts, as October is A to Zen month. We're going to talk with Rev Shar. She has a program called Lucid Waking on the A2Zen.fm site, if you will. It's not radio. It's not a podcast because a lot of them are done live. And Rev, thank you. Rev Shar, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
this is quite interesting in regards to being able to talk with folks who are communicating with other folks around the country. I don't normally take phone calls unless we have, say, our Eastern astrologer. Wow. Mm-hmm. It's late in the Sunday evening. I guess that's the problem. Nonetheless, we will take calls then, and every once in a while we'll have an intuitive on. I take it that you do take calls regularly.
I don't get them.
You don't. Well, you ask for them, but you don't get them.
Yeah. When I have a guest on, we'll take calls once in a while. But my audience tends to just like to listen. They're kind of voyeuristic, and
understand.
They communicate to me through email.
Ah, okay.
So, and that's where I get a lot of my show's subject matters, through the emails I get and through conversations that I have with people. Because the show's based on it's loosely based on the term lucid dreaming, except it's lucid waking. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to be able to be this aware self in their dream state. And the people that are trying to become aware in their dream state aren't real aware in their waking state.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I found this always to be quite humorous. And when the opportunity to host my own radio show, which fell out of the clear blue sky, thanks to Galen Southard, I couldn't come up with a great name because it had to be catchy. You know,
yeah.
I'm just that kind of girl. I got to catch you with right off the bat.
Right.
And I was thinking about lucid waking, lucid dreaming. I said, you know, well, why not lucid waking? Why can't we do a show that centers around what it means to be lucid in our waking dream state instead of the sleeping dream state? And what does it mean to get beyond that wakeful state into a broader understanding of consciousness? So that's kind of where the show's evolved to. And it kind of follows my personal journey with this, but also through some of the most amazing guests that I've had, like Stan Tenen with Meru.org and Rasha, who you as well interviewed.
Yes.
Keith Wilson. Oh, my goodness. So many just amazing, amazing people have come into my sphere of living just because of that show, that all have these fantastic stories to share about how they are waking up in their living process. They're not going off on, you know, major retreats and stuff, although, you know, those are fine to do, and I do those. I don't do them with the intent to wake up at them. My whole life is the process of becoming lucid in the waking state. So that's basically lucid waking.
In a nutshell. In a nutshell.
In a small nutshell.
Exactly.
And I like to talk.
Well, let's talk then. Let's talk a little bit about that. I'm in the process of reading and rereading, as our listeners have been made aware on more than one occasion on this program. I'm rereading what I call my metaphysical primer, Autobiography of a Yogi. Mm-hmm. And one of the clear messages that comes through there is that this is all an illusion. This is all Maya, mm-hmm. as the word is.
Yes, that which can be measured and labeled.
Which, if it can be measured and it can be labeled, it's not real.
Exactly.
Which
it's a construct.
Yeah, exactly. It's a paradox. Mm-hmm. Not a paradigm, a paradigm. Although there are those who would put it into it, create a paradigm out of it.
Oh, yes. They love to. It's fun.
But it is so interesting, because what I am doing as I go through my life these days, as I'm rereading this book, and these things are brought back to my remembrance from when I read it when I was 17, mm-hmm. is when certain situations develop, I'm finding it more difficult to remember this phrase, but when certain situations develop that can be measured and weighed, I have to consciously, if not in my mind, even out loud, even quietly to myself, it's not real. It's not real. It's not real. And it's hard to remember that, because we are so tied into the five senses. The irony is that the sixth sense, at least of the six basic ones, I'm hearing there are more than six senses now, but let's just stick with the basic six. The sixth one has nothing to do with what can be weighed or measured.
Right.
And that's where we want to be.
Yeah.
So when we have dreams, I mean, when we lay our head down on the pillow and our eyes close and the body chooses to rest, because it doesn't always choose to rest. Sometimes we'll lay there hours and the eyes are open and we're totally aware. But when the body will allow us to rest and then we start having those dreams, those inner dreams, mm-hmm. what, from your perspective, what are those? Where are they coming from? Big question.
Oh, gosh. That's such a good one, because there's a lot of things going on first in the brain that has to happen for the physical occurrence of the dream to happen. You have to be able, the brain has to fire off a certain way in order to let go of its daily programs and allow consciousness to play in a different level. So your brain waves go way down or way up, however you see that. It depends on your school of thought. Oh, no, that's higher brainwave. No, it's lower, but it goes mm-hmm. into theta. Mm-hmm. Your brain goes into theta, and sometimes it'll dip down into delta, and you go into REM sleep, and your brain releases some really wonderful chemicals. And the new studies they have out now have a lot to do with a little gland called the pineal gland, and it has this chemical that it releases called DMT. And it has melatonin. And if I get my scientific jargon confused, please forgive me, everybody. But it has these two wonderful chemicals. And when they fire off together, you are able to escape, quote unquote, the daily metaphor of the dream and experience a much broader, expansive metaphor of the dream, of which we are all consciousness is part of this huge dream. Some people refer to it as God's dream. So when we're in the dream state, when the body has gone to rest and the brain has slowed down and it's gone beyond its processing of the day's information packets that come into it, because that's part of the dream state too. But if we're talking about the consciousness and what it's doing, it's literally going out into the expansive field and playing out there. And I think that it's very important for the human organism to have these kind of experiences on a regular basis, much like the tide. The water will come into the shore and bring in all of this vast water, and then it retreats back into itself, and then it pushes back in. And I think we're doing that with our dream states. I think our dream states are our ways of naturally and organically expanding consciousness on a regular basis so that we are literally not locked into the limbic brain system and the lower neocortex way of those two systems organizing and operating and creating the reality that we see. So that's one explanation of dreams that I have. And then we can get into others if you want.
Okay. And just for those of you who are just joining us here on the program, we are talking with Rev Shar. She is one of the hosts of A2Zen.fm. Now, Rev Shar, you mentioned that there was somebody that got you involved in doing what we'll call a radio broadcast. You'd never done one before.
No.
And when you were first approached, obviously most people's first reaction is, really? Are you serious? I take it that may have been your first reaction, or fantastic, I've been waiting for this opportunity.
Well, I like to talk, but I never thought about being on the radio or in entertainment, you know, which is all radio is a form of entertainment. All public speaking is a form of entertainment. Mm-hmm. But it took me a while to put those together. I had already been a public speaker for a while just by being a reverend. I had Galen's been passed away now for a couple of years. He was also an A to Zen radio show host. He was a veteran of radio, and he did Astronumerics with Holly Hall. Mm-hmm. And he was my friend before that, and he was asking me my intuitive advice on getting involved in this new little station called Spirit Quest Radio back then, and wanting to know if it was a good bet and what I felt. And I said, go for it. You know, you need to be back on the airwaves. And we had these long discussions, and he finally said, you know, we got the show going. We've been up for a little while, but why don't you would be so much fun to talk to. Call in. And so I called in, and we did have a blast. Me, him, and Holly had a great fun chatting. And, you know, I'm pretty much an open book. Whatever comes to my head just kind of falls out, and which makes for interesting conversation.
Indeed.
Sometimes.
Yes.
Put me around the right people, and I can go crazy. And so we had a great time. And that night I got an email from Galen, and he said, you know, Holly thinks that you're perfect and wants to know why you aren't doing this kind of thing and sharing your thoughts and stuff with people because they're very different. And I sat on that for about a week, and then I called into their show again, and we had fun again. And then I talked to Holly, and she told me about her vision, and I told her about what my vision was in my life at that time. And that was 4 years ago. I ended up on the air the first Sunday of September 4 years ago. I've been on air now 4 years. Mm.
And obviously,
and only missed two Sundays, by the way, two live broadcasts.
Well, that's the beauty of recording and doing archived or the best of, as we like to say, or encore presentations.
Yes.
Those are positive ways of saying I'm running a rerun.
Although I'm not going to be live in front of the mic right now.
I'm fortunate because I interview people that I am so far ahead right now that if I do a few more, I'll have enough for 2014. I mean, every Saturday in 2014.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's hard. and what's hard for me is turning people away. I don't want to miss the opportunity of talking with this person. I'm sorry, Rev Shar. I'm booked up through January of next year. And give me a call back in early January. We'll see what by the time we get to January, I'm sorry. I'm booked up to May of this year. Give me a call in May. It's very frustrating because I would turn down interviews because I didn't have the slots. And now I've decided I'm going to create a page on the site. And I'm telling you, listeners, that you can go to. It's the interviews page. It's different from the radio shows page. This interview, Rev Shar and I, it's on the radio shows page. All you have to do is go there, and she's at the top for the actually, it's going to be the 20th of October. And you just click on the play button and boom, there it is. Whereas interviews that I have already done that will make it to the radio broadcast are on the interviews page. And right now there are about 25 or 30 interviews that I have stacked up, if you will. But I send links to the guests and say, here's the interview now. And as soon as I have an open slot, I will put you in. And this way you, the listener, can get a sneak peek, if you will, at the entire interview. I don't know if you know this or not, Rev Shar, but I do three versions of this program. The first version is for the radio broadcast, which is short. It's only about 45 minutes.
Right.
But then there is the 55-minute version for A to Zen. And then there is however long we talk. I mean, I've done an hour and a half. And that interview would be up on either the radio show's page or the interview page. So, again, because I like to talk too, but I also like to listen and learn. And I have gathered so much incredible information on the one hand, made some incredible connections with the various guests that I have. And as I've opened it up to my guests in the past, I opened it up to you that if you ever find yourself here in the Santa Barbara area, we'd love to have you in studio to do an interview as well. I think that would be a great
awesome.
Fun. And when we get back from our interview, we're going to dive into a couple of other subjects. I think it would be kind of fun to see where things go in that regard. So stay with us. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And we will be right back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. And we are talking with Rev Shar. She is one of the many hosts on A2Zen.fm. As am I, one of the many hosts, and my program is on Sundays at 3 p.m. Pacific time. Your program, Lucid Waking, is on when, Rev Shar?
It's on Sundays until the end of the month. Two more shows, okay. Two more Sunday shows. And then we move to Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern time.
That's a much better slot.
Yes. And I might end up with callers.
Well, hey, you never know. You never know. I've thought go ahead.
My thing with being on Sundays for the last 4 years is for some reason, the last 2 years, every major holiday fell on a Sunday.
Ah, yes.
I had Mother's Day. I had Christmas.
All these
great, wonderful holidays fell on a Sunday. So Tuesdays will be a nice change of pace. I've already packed. I've moved everything over to Tuesdays. We're ready to go.
Good deal. The moving men are coming next week?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's all ready.
What's nice is it's so inexpensive, too.
Yes.
When we moved from Phoenix to Santa Barbara, we threw everything into an 18-wheeler, a cab over. It was 9,000 pounds of stuff, cost me $5,000. And that was to move from one part of the country to the other. But to move from one radio station to another, it didn't cost me anything.
Yeah.
I love it. The moving men
didn't from one day slot to another. It's like, oh, that's
charge me
so
a dime.
Simple.
Exactly. Well, let me ask you something in regards to the long, wonderful description you gave earlier of my question regarding our dreams in our sleep state. Mm-hmm. Where are you coming from as far as your background in all of this?
Oh, that's a good question. I have been a consciousness explorer since I was 11 years old. My father was such a wise man. First, I come from a lineage of ministers and psychics.
Interesting combination.
Yeah, my dad's father was a Church of Christ minister.
I know the branch well.
Yes. So when I told my father I was going to become a minister, he reminded me that his sister got cancer when she became a minister. So that was...
Okay.
So we didn't talk about it with Daddy anymore after
I'm
that.
Trying to figure out the connection, but okay.
Well, in the Church of Christ ministries, at least back then, females were not. It was blasphemy for a female to become a minister.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
You just could not do that. So
you also don't play musical instruments.
Exactly. And you don't dance. And you're not supposed to drink.
Well, we won't go there.
But my grandfather was married to my grandmother, who was extremely psychic. And she pulled those of us grandchildren aside that she saw the quote-unquote gift in, and she told us, I found this out later, individually, that we were each touched and she could see it, and not to talk about it with people. Of course, then you have to remember this is back in the early 1970s for me. Mm-hmm. And for her, it was, you know, devil's work and stuff, so you don't talk about it. But so that was where that part started. And then my father who, poor man, struggled with which dichotomy of belief he was supposed to follow. He got involved with Jose Silva and the Silva mind control method in the early 70s when Silva just came out with it. And my father took it in El Paso when he was stationed in El Paso, and he came back to Corpus and he said, I'm putting my whole family through this. I was 11 years old at the time, and I got consciousness training at the age of 11. And so we learned, one of the things that we learned to do with the dream state was to do problem solving. Mm. And we learned how to channel surf in our mind. So it was like, if you want to be like Albert Einstein, you need to go to a level of consciousness in your mind. And we learned about the brainwave state. So you're in beta consciousness most of the time, or the BS state. That's the state where you can lie to yourself. Alpha consciousness is where most people go to when they have their aha moments or when they go into meditation. And then we have the theta state, which is usually our dream state, and our REM state. Our REM state will dip down even into delta, and then there's gamma, which is like supposedly dead, but I don't believe that. Mm-hmm. But so I started learning about it at the age of 11, and learning how to program myself through my dream states, being able to work with the filing system of the mind and the brain at a very young state. And I've just kind of been drawn into neuro study ever since then, and how the mind and the brain works with consciousness. Because I think consciousness is its own entity, but in physicality, it can't recognize itself without the brain and that kind of, you know, electrical neurotransmitting kind of radio station that the body is. And so the consciousness and this physical organic radio station kind of coexist together. And I've been studying it since I was 11 years old.
So,
I don't know if that really gives you any.
So the consciousness, from your perspective, using the analogy that you are using, the consciousness would be the equivalent of the waves of the radio station, and
yes,
the physical radio station is the, so to speak, the transmitter. It's more that allows the embodiment, if you will, of those waves.
Yes.
Gives the waves, if you will, a place to reside and, so to speak, transmit from.
Yes, and the transmitter has its own level of intelligence with those waves. And so what the transmitter does is it pulls forth from those waves information about what it deems should be there. Like there should be a microphone if I'm talking on the radio. So there's a microphone, there's a desk, there's, you know, you can't just have a microphone. It has to be connected to something. It's connected mm-hmm. to a computer, you know. So the brain and the consciousness together form this spatial hologram in my mind mm-hmm. that identity plays with consciousness
right.
through, and pulls out from all of these belief systems and everything. And the average human being is playing out the same belief system over and over and over again. I call them mental consciousness loops. They're basically living off memory. And so, and they're playing with their memories, kind of like the shell game. You know, they're just kind of moving the memories around just enough mm-hmm. to where life looks different and feels a little different. But we say things to ourselves like, why am I going through this again? Geez, it's like this guy is just like the last guy. Well, that's because we're playing the shell game with what we know.
Yeah.
And we're just kind of moving it around. But if you get to train your mind and understand the programming that you've been living off of, and it's not good and it's not bad, get out of judgment. And you just start to understand, well, my goodness, look at this. All the men in my life look like this. Well, what is that saying? What is the belief statement that is being run? And the funny thing is once identity sees these things, it knows that it's in the world of Maya.
Mm.
It yeah. understands it right away. Well, that's a label. That's an identification. So that can't be it. And in the work that I do away from radio, I run a stress management service called Energy Works. And in that, I actually help people discover what those patterns are that they're living in their waking conscious life, and how to become aware of them, and thus become lucid in their waking conscious life. And as soon as they become aware of them, the patterns start to dispel themselves, and they literally laugh out loud and say, it's this easy. And yes, it really is that this easy to shift your conscious perception. And when you shift it within yourself, the outer world realigns itself to that shift. And so your world is going to look different. It's going to behave differently. And it's going to appear like magic to happen. I can give some examples if you want.
Well, we may talk about those examples because I know a lot of people are wanting to change themselves, change the world around them right here, right now, mm-hmm. Which is, from what I have learned, next to impossible, the here and the now, because the choices that you made in the past have placed you where you are now. So the only thing you can change is your future. If you follow my path here.
I understand what you're saying.
Right.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So in order to...
So how do you change the future?
How do you change the future in terms of not reacting anymore to the stimuli that comes your way from moment to moment, but changing that to an action? And the only way you can have an action as opposed to reaction is to get out of your emotions, if you will, get out of those old patterns, those old stories, as some of our guests have talked about,
yes.
as well.
In the story. Order,
yeah. And
stories
are really, yeah, really. The story lie?
The story of I, or of yes, I. The story lie.
Well, now, same thing, I guess. What's interesting is I forget what it was that I was watching, and maybe I was listening to the book and I can't recall off the top of my head. But all I remember is that the moment that there is the person and there's the thing. Mm-hmm. And that the moment that we identify self as I, we move from person to thing. We have, mm-hmm. we have turned ourselves into the subject.
Right.
Instead of the, I'm going to say the personal pronoun, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And so to use those terms, I, me, mine, and so forth, we need to, certainly you don't want to start talking in the third person. I've heard some people, yes, and Richard Dugan really likes those kinds of things. And Richard Dugan would like to ask the question. And
now that's separating yourself even more.
A little too far.
In my opinion.
Yeah, that's a little too far.
Yeah, but about unifying the self, not separating it.
Well, and that's the other thing, too, is, of course, we talk about the body, mind, soul, and spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we've separated.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, and of course, science and spirituality have been separated for centuries.
Yes.
And they're trying to maintain that separation. But what's ironic is that science is not proving, but more verifying what spirit has been telling us all along.
Uh-huh.
And
spirit's verifying science.
And spirit's verifying. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So
same coin, different sides.
Exactly. And I find that really, really fascinating as I go through my life and the walk that I am on in terms of the things that I'm trying to incorporate. I mean, I want to share with you real quickly here,
mm-hmm.
a poem, and I'm going to see if I can locate it fairly quickly as I'm talking to you here. It's a poem that was written and sung by a Sebastian Temple.
Mm.
Now, this gentleman, he basically, and I'll, if I find it, I'm going to be quite fortunate because I'm not 100% certain where I saved it. But nonetheless, this poem speaks to the issue of the gods and the truth of man.
Right.
And it talks about where God hid that truth.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the gods, you know, actually it was plural, gods. Mm-hmm. And they were very concerned because the last thing they wanted was for man to find this truth.
Mm-hmm.
And where shall we hide the truth?
Where shall we hide the truth from man? The gods all cried when he was made. How can we guard our secret now? They are each of them so afraid. Hide it in the earth, he will mine it. Hide it in the mountain, he will climb it. Even in the sea, he will find it. Where shall we hide the truth from man? Quite beside themselves, they cried, this little guy will take our throne. We have made him far too smart not to claim our heaven home. Hide it in matter, he'll analyze it. Hide it in water, he'll crystallize it. Even in the hell, he'll surmise it. Where shall we hide the truth from man? They thought of stars in outer space or in the nature of a tree, but they knew that man could solve each and every mystery. Hide it in the wind, he'll pursue it. Hide it in an act, he will do it. Even in an atom, he will view it. Where shall we hide the truth from man? Then they solved the mystery of how the frightened gods should win. The wisest said, let's take the truth and hide it deep inside of him. Hide it in his heart, he will doubt it. Hide it in his soul, he'll live without it. Even if we should reveal and shout it, he won't believe the truths within him. Written by Sebastian Temple for the Phenomenon of Man Project in honor of the work of Pierre Teilhard de Chardin.
Yes.
And I found that years ago through a study group that I was a part of back in Phoenix. And numerous notebooks of the study materials that were handed out. And that was one of the items that was handed out. And that's always been very profound from my perspective, because I remember hearing when working at the Christian radio station for a period of 15 years, I remember hearing how the last place that you wanted to come from in terms of living your life, you did not want to come from your heart. Your heart was evil. It was vile. It was the seed of this. And I mean, and they would even have Bible passages that would verify the fact that the heart was the seat of whatever. It was not a good place. And I thought, how interesting when in the Gospels, Jesus says, unless you come to me as little children. Well, where do little children come from? I mean, in terms of when they're in their day-to-day living, they don't come from their mind. They're just living their lives and they're coming from their heart.
Yes, and their heart is equivalent to what we term innocence.
Yeah,
it is the state of wonderment. In instead of owning the past, they let the past go and they stay in that moment of self-discovery.
Yeah, I when I finally located that poem, I thought, you know, I'm just going to record this thing so that I can pull it up. I don't have to have the paper with me. As long as I can find the file, it'll be fine. But it to me is extremely profound. And so when we talk, going back to the issue of dreams in the dream state, I've noticed that in my dreams, and without getting into any specifics, but there are times when my dream will somehow synchronize with the waking state reality. Mm-hmm. And that something will be happening within the dream that is happening in the real world, in my immediate proximity. Mm-hmm. And I wake up and I take care of it. Mm-hmm. And then I go back and I lay down and I go back to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
I find that it sounds to me as if our consciousness and or our subconscious are tied pretty closely together, a lot more than maybe we think, because a lot of people think that they're pretty separate. So let me ask you, Rev Shar, in regards
yes.
to this whole aspect of dreams and the connection between the conscious and the subconscious, I mean, obviously, you're looking at unifying everything. How is it that those two specifically, and then of course maybe I have to throw in the unconscious as well, which probably is more along the lines of involuntary, maybe in particular, to use an analogy, involuntary bodily functions, if you will. I mean, we don't have to think about our heart beating really breathing for that matter, because we do that anyway, and the blood flows whether we think about it or not, and so on and so forth. So how do these three elements, if you will, of us in this context, how are they working together to maybe A, keep us safe, B, guide us on our path, and C, how are they connected to that higher self that is also part of us? I mean, that's a big thing to take on, but if we're going to unify these things, man and his brain needs to understand.
Exactly.
And I'm speaking in the third person. Man and his brain needs to understand, so that we can at least maybe let that go. Because when we understand something, we do tend to release those questions and that musing, and we can move on to other things.
Right. The basic thing is the first initial understanding doesn't happen in beta consciousness. In the beta brainwave state, we are mostly functioning off of repetitive patterns. It is our most automated self, okay? And it's necessary. Don't get me wrong. The beta state is very necessary for the human organism's day-to-day functionings. It helps us not have to think about things like, I need a bathroom break, and you don't overthink your bathroom break. You just automatically know where the bathroom is. You've scoped it out before. You've been in that building. So the pattern living that we do day to day is from our beta state. And that's why we so easily lie to ourselves in that state. We can say, well, I want a car of this nature, but this, that's what I want. But the belief system behind the beta state that's down in the subconscious is the program that's running there is I can't have what I want, and I'm oversimplifying for time's sake. So when we're walking around in our day-to-day automated existence, we're not identifying with things like breathing and heartbeat and bodily functions unless they cause embarrassment, unless an emotional trigger happens through those things. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we just let the body be what the body is. Pain and embarrassment, anything that brings attention to something being wrong with the body, that brings us back into our identification with it. And that's all in the beta state. Now, the alpha state is where a lot of subconscious information comes up for the waking conscious mind to start to integrate it into its beta processing. This is where all of our wonderful ideas come from. You were talking about your dream, and I've had very, very psychic dreams of my daughter where they're called psychic dreams, but now what I call them is bleed-throughs, consciousness bleed-throughs. And when you're in a higher state of consciousness or a deeper state of brainwave activity, you can literally move through the veils, or what we call the levels, very easily if you're relaxed and if you are not holding on to the identifiable markers of who you are. You can exchange information with different layers of consciousness in that surreal state of that, what we call the place between waking and sleeping. And in that place, we're actually already unified. We only don't feel unified when we are in our waking beta state mind. We feel very disconnected and very disjointed. But when we get into the deeper layers of consciousness, we start to feel very connected to everything. The deeper you go in consciousness, the more connected you feel. So it's not like you're not already unified. What we're trying to understand is the exact question that you asked me, how does this unified process actually work to keep this human being functioning, to keep it in some kind of semblance of sturdiness and stability? And the beautiful thing about that is that there is no stability and there is no real human being, because it's always happening in the state of Maya, that which is labeled and measured. So long as you are holding on to being stable inside a realm that is consistently in a transient state, you are constantly going to feel disjointed and in a state of chaos. And you're going to be trying to figure out how to stop that from happening. The only way that I've found to stop that from happening and to touch that unifying principle is to be able to, and the words are so cliche, but seriously, it's to let go. But what does let go mean? Because it's been overused and overstated. Let go means to be able to slow your breath down, to be able to, on my show, I say this all the time, know where your feet are. You know, we're not even really changing the future or changing the past. We're understanding where we really are in the moment, because the moment is really the only solidity that we have, and it moves and it changes. When you take humans out of a building, for example, the building deteriorates rather quickly. You can have people living in a building, and even if they don't take care of it, it still stands up fairly well just from being occupied. So when you take your energy out of something, that subject starts to lose its sense of matter. And so in the now moment, when you can see clearly that the past is not with you in this moment, if you know where your feet are, my feet are on the floor and I'm sitting in a chair, and if I went to grab the five-year-old that I was that's pissed off at her mother, I can't find her. She doesn't exist. I can't hold her. I can't smell her. I can recall and remember all of those things, but there's nothing solid that I can grab onto in this moment concerning that, right? Mm-hmm. That's just a memory. So that tells the rational mind that's focused in this moment, well, then we don't need that, because that's not here. It's not present. And as soon as, I'm kind of oversimplifying this, but as soon as self-identity realizes that it's not its past, these very interesting things start to happen psychologically. And you start to decrease the amount of emotional energy that sustains the looped pattern of activity. What's going on in your brain is you're rewriting the real estate of the neurotransmitter activity.
You brought up psychology. You opened the door, so I'm going to walk right through the door.
Go for it.
Okay, so how do I it's kind of like I took enough psychology in college to get myself in trouble. So tell me, how do the elements from psychology of the id, ego, and superego, how do they play, or what are they represented by in relation to the consciousness, subconscious, and unconscious, if they're even related in that respect? And again, you and I are in agreement, you know, let's unify.
Yeah.
But in order to unify, we need
I think they are basically, when we're trying to label and dissect the human entity, I think basically those are the same things, mm-hmm. but we're looking at them from two points of view.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So the point of view of the ID of the ego and the persona and the super persona is that's all identity. That's identity describing itself to itself. And when we go off into the consciousness, it is identity, but yet it's an expanded version of identity. Identity itself loses its self-importance within the consciousness realm. The deeper I go into exploring consciousness, the less attached I am to any labels that say who I am. And I start to identify with being all that is. So the ego, for me, is the self-replicating principle of man. It is the one that says, I am here. I am a being. This being has a biological function, and that function is to survive and to procreate, which is self-replicate. And then we have the aspect that says, well, that is kind of like the cloak that goes around that, you know. Now ego has to put an identity on so that it can be something that has to survive and has to procreate and all of this. And then that cloak puts on some armor, and the armor is the super ego or the super persona. And also, we can also look at this as ego being the singular I, the personality being the we or the social I, and the super persona as being the universal I. And this is how we can actually see how they're correlated to layers of consciousness. We have the layer of consciousness that is self-identified, and then we have the layer of consciousness that only identifies with everything that is around it. And then we have the layer of consciousness that identifies with all that is and all that is not. And so it seems to be that the more that the identity, the core identity itself, can detach from what it believes it is, it gets birthed into something grander. And then it can let go of that, and it gets birthed into something grander. And eventually it finds out that it's not anything and that it is everything. And now we're getting really esoteric.
Yeah.
You know, so when you bring psychology and spirituality into it and the chemistry of the brain chemistry, and you bring all of that together, you actually end up with this beautiful, amazing conglomerate of energy that has managed to maintain itself into something that it considers to be a solid mass form that can create and replicate creation over and over and over again. And the way that it keeps itself occupied with it is it makes it very interesting. So it has an identity, and the identity has stories, and the stories self-replicate over and over and over again.
Interesting. And of course, once again, you've opened a number of doors. I'm going to walk through one of them and continue this conversation as we're sitting here talking with Rev Shar, one of the hosts of HSN.FM. And one of the doors that you opened up has to do with the issue of self-replication. Mm-hmm. One of the premises of this program is new paradigms for a new world. We're looking for those new ways of living. Mm-hmm. I've often said that when, you know, someone would say, well, what do you mean new ways? What's wrong with the ways we're living today? I said, look around. Just look around. Are they working? I don't think so. Not real well. And that there are better ways, and people are coming up with those better ways. Many people throughout especially this past century, have come up with some incredible ways of living. And community seems to be the direction we're headed back towards. But back to the issue of self-replication in this conversation. I asked this question of one of my guests a couple, 3 weeks ago, Mark McIntyre. He's a professor of philosophy at City College, Santa Barbara City College. And I said, why is it important, not just for us as individuals or even as a human race, to replicate? Why is it important for the human race to continue? And I have to say, I believe I do have to say this. I am not speaking about, okay, we need to annihilate the human race. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying stop having babies. Okay? Stop having babies. So every baby who is conceived up to the 31st of December, 2013, all those babies through September of the following year, 14, can be born, and that's it. We're not having any more because we haven't learned the lessons that we should have learned by now. And what's the point of continuing living on the treadmill? Feeding the machine, being consumer producers. I mean, they say that it's a great thing that we export democracy to other countries. Who's going to save us from democracy? I mean, in the present state that it's in. Yeah. So the question comes to you in that regard, and maybe I need to make it a twofold question, is why do we feel the need to replicate? And is it really all that important that we continue, because as you and I would probably agree, you know, that we're the only species on the planet that if we really did want to, we could annihilate ourselves, you know, out into extinction.
Yeah. But here's the thing. We could annihilate ourselves into extinction, but we would not be annihilating life. Life is the self-replicating principle, and we are part of that. And the beautiful thing about life is it doesn't just self-replicate amongst humans, it self-replicates amongst all life. Now, I have people that argue with me that tables are alive, and I tell them, no, tables are not alive. Tables have a vibration, yes, but they are a manifestation of mind, pure mind. They are not self, a table cannot make a table out of itself.
And they're also part of the Maya. They're part of the Maya, the illusion.
Exactly. So they're not part of the self-replicating principle, except for that they are an extension of that which self-replicates. Mm-hmm. So plants self-replicate, and we see forests come and we see forests go over time through evolution, and we see species come and we see species go over time and over evolution. And I see the same thing with humanity. I think we need to self-replicate because we're life. And I can't answer why that is, why life has to keep self-replicating. I haven't found that answer yet.
It just does.
It's safe to say I don't know that. But I do know that that's what life does. It self-replicates.
Yeah.
Now, does humanity need to continue? I'm not so self-arrogant to say, yes, we need to continue. We're a species just like any other life form. And I think that we have our time in the sun. And whatever period of time that is depends upon our own psyche and what we choose to do with the life that chose this form to be a self-replicator. I think it's a great honor to be able to be conscious that we are self-replicators and that perhaps, and this is my personal opinion, perhaps there comes a degree of self-responsibility in learning what creation really is. And perhaps that is the new way of living, is actually finding out what is the personal responsibility in understanding how creation flows and works through me. Mm. How is it that I can, quote unquote, break the chains that bind me and keep me in, to use your words, this consumerism kind of, you know, living where all I do is consume and destroy and discharge and that. And I think, I'll be honest with you, I really think that that's working itself out. I think life is so incredibly mysterious and yet predictable at the same time that it can only handle a system which cannibalizes upon itself for so long. And nature, the nature of the organic aspect of life itself, will step in and correct whatever needs to be corrected. If the human mind consciousness itself doesn't step in, the organic part of nature and life self-replication will step in.
Mm, interesting.
That's my thought anyway.
I'm going to throw something else into the mix. And just to get your impressions, I'm not asking you to define this phrase, but what does it mean to you? I think, therefore I am. How does that play into what we've been talking about?
I think, therefore I am. For me, it's an outdated mode of understanding what I am. But it came at the birth of a new understanding of the human consciousness and the fact that human beings were able to conceptualize themselves and the misunderstanding that other animals could not. So the process that we could think and we can conceptualize proved to identity that it was here. But I don't even follow the same theory as you know, I wouldn't change a thing in my past because my past made me who I am today.
Right.
My past only makes me who I am today if that's what I believe about myself. But because I can literally replicate and create and feel and emote and think, and none of that is something much more grander to state I am. But I think, therefore I am. Well, I poop, therefore I am. You know, to me, it's
same thing,
concept.
Yeah.
It's coming in and it's going out. So the transience of life is, for me, what really is. This body is not what is. This body is transient, and it's proving it every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know this body is here for a limited amount of time.
Right.
But that came in fresh, and it's
right.
Yeah, it's going to wear itself out eventually, and whatever the life is that's flowing through it will be, you know, recycled somehow.
In some fashion. I've often also dealt with the paradox, or at least the mental aspect of we come from the oneness, we are going to return to the oneness, but in between we're in this duality, which again is still Maya. Mm-hmm. And so my question has been,
part of the oneness.
Well, and I would agree with you, but my question is more, well, then what's the point? If we're going from the oneness to the oneness, why are we even bothering with the duality? Why are we even bothering with the illusion?
And that's fun. No.
Well, but believe it or not, that's what
I
some people
have
said.
I actually have an answer,
though. Okay, go
ahead.
I
don't know if it's a right answer.
There are no right answers on this program.
Yeah. I have a couple of terms that I like to use, and one of them is mental masturbation.
Mm-hmm.
I use it all the time at chapel. we're great mental masturbators. You know, we like to think about ourselves all the time.
Yeah.
And we like to think about life all the time. And we like to play with the concepts of life all the time. And so in that respect, it's fun for creation to look at itself in a myriad of illusory ways, to see how many different ways it can know itself and see itself and play with itself, you know.
Yes.
But then there's also, I'm going to use a story that actually happened. I was giving a talk at a friend's house, and she was very upset that her son-in-law was going to take her grandson hunting. And she was standing there in a tizzy trying to release negative energy. And all I saw was that she was building up negative energy and that she could very well drive herself into, you know, a state. And so I asked her what she was doing. She said, well, I'm just trying to release. And I said, well, let's stop doing what you're doing for a minute and let's talk about what you're trying to release. And so this little story answers a lot of questions. So she said, well, I don't want my grandson to be taught how to kill. Killing is wrong. And I said, okay, so you're instilling your belief system into your grandson, and you want your grandson to follow your belief system over his father's belief system, because you're denoting that his father's belief system is wrong. She said, yes, it's wrong to kill. It says so. Everything in my body says it's wrong to kill. I said, okay, so I'm going to give you a scenario to help you with this. And this is for anybody that thinks that there's anything going on in their life that doesn't match their own belief system and might help you make sense of it. And I use the term God, but use creation, use whatever you want. But here's the thing. What if the child is God and the father is God and the rifle is God? And the bullet is God, and the deer is God. And not only that, but what if the ground that everybody is standing on is God, and the air that everybody is breathing is God, and the velocity in which the bullet travels, the action itself, is God? Then where are you going to point the finger and say this is wrong when it's all God playing with itself? You know, I can get naughty, but you know what I mean? You know, when it is all life looking at itself and expressing itself, and that's how it's being expressed in that moment, when we can take judgment away from the scene of what we're looking at and see God in everything or see creation in everything, you gain a completely different perspective, not just of yourself, but of life. And when she could see that, all of her anger and all of her angst and all of her doubt melted instantly. She said, oh my goodness, I'm judging creation. I said, yes. Now, this can be, you know, people have actually said, well, that's pretty watered down, so it's okay to just go murder people. I'm like, well, I have my own ethics. I'm not going to preach my ethics to other people. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go around murdering other people,
right,
because it's not part of my personal ethics,
right,
and it takes me out of my own integrity. So here's the thing. Follow your own personal integrity. When you are out and when you are acting out of alignment with your own personal integrity, then your life is chaotic. It feels unstable. You don't know where you're going. It's because you're out of integrity with whatever is driving the identity at that point. It from a truth point, not from the illusion point, not from the point of Maya, but what the moment needs right then and there. And this is what people have a really hard time letting go of, is thinking they know what the moment needs instead of dropping that illusion and just waiting for the moment to show what it needs you to do. And I call that following the impulse. I don't know if that answered your question. I tend to ramble.
No. Very good. Very good. Naughty is also God. So just so you know,
yeah.
So that's not a problem. I'm also fascinated by these kinds of conversations. It was like with this conversation, I hate to bring it to an end. I hated to bring our conversation with Mark McIntyre to an end, because I love talking about these things and hearing the different perspectives. And as I say, I'm reading and rereading and rereading this book. And if it were possible to wear out the digits, I suppose eventually I will, the digital data. But I find it just, there's something about the conversation, I think, also that also tends to help to rewrite and rearrange those neural pathways as well.
Yes.
And I think that if we start to ponder those things in that context, and I take you one step further as far as that this is God, that is God, this is God, that is God. When it comes to things that I eat and drink, now there are certain things that I will not, that I try to minimize because it does seem to affect, and I'm not sure if I haven't reached a certain level where I can push that aside. But I even ask this question of people that science has determined that everything is energy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if everything is energy, then what difference does it make what you consume, what you put into your body? I mean, I like a myriad of things. I'll try mm-hmm. something once, sometimes twice. But I've never had the kinds of, what will I call them, digestive processing problems that some folks have with certain foods. As a matter of fact, I've had very few in my lifetime.
Yeah.
There was a time when I had to stop eating pork spare ribs because they kept giving me heartburn. I haven't gone back to them because I said, I'm not going there.
Soda. I personally can't eat gluten.
Yeah, well, and yet I can eat a myriad of other things up and down the spectrum that tastes okay, that doesn't taste so okay, but it does not adversely affect my system.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I just keep telling myself it's all energy. It's all the same stuff. It doesn't matter. Not that I'm going to go eat rat poison or something like that, but but do you kind of get my drift on that?
Yeah. And it's not about whether the food is energy. It's what the subconscious self believes about either that food or what that food symbolizes in an emotional trigger sense. I'm healing my bowels because there was a lot about my life I could not digest emotionally. And there were lots of things like I've discovered in my system, inflammation is not about what I've eaten at all, but inflammation is about my belief system inside about being unified with the masculine and feminine side of myself.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So it's not really the food. The food is the trigger.
Yeah.
See, everything to me is the trigger because it's all energy, because
right.
I literally see everything as energy.
Right.
So everything is an invitation. A trigger is an invitation. Fear is, it's all an invitation to go inward and see what energy, what label I'm putting on the energy.
Yeah. With Beth McDonald, our astronomical and astrological assignment editor, we have on every week to talk about what's happening in the respective signs and out in the stars and what have you. Every once in a while, of course, she'll mention, okay, Mercury's in retrograde. And of course, most people, oh my God, I got to go hunker down in my underground bunker for the next 21 days. When this is over, everything will be okay and I can go about my life. Well, she's added an interesting twist. She says, it's not about the bad stuff happening.
No.
It's a time of observation.
Yeah.
It's a time of self-observation.
Yeah, it's reflection.
Reflection time.
Yeah.
Retrograde, it starts with an R. Reflection time starts with an R. Put those two together and you will do fine.
And things within your energy system that you have not allowed to work out and process out, you've held on to that energy and said, this is what this energy is. Mercury retrograde is a wonderful time to look at those things. And sometimes unconsciously we'll manifest things in our life to make us look at those things because we're begging for them inwardly to be released.
And that is true. It would take me a while, of course, because I would have to dig deep down inside to find some of these things and put them down on paper, for example. Let's say you were to write a list of those issues that you wanted to deal with. Because, boy, I tell you, I would feel so much lighter. I would feel, well, and I'll use an external example. We've been going through the storage area underneath our house over the last 3 weekends. And the first Saturday, we spent 2 hours out there, pulled out boxes from one side, opened them up. I mean, then, of course, they're cardboard and they're outside under the house. And, of course, rodents and this and that and the other thing have been getting in there, nesting and what have you. So we're very careful in that regard. But the second Saturday, we went to the other side and we pulled out everything and went through it all and said, okay, we're going to keep this, this we're going to throw away, this we're going to sell. And then the third Saturday, we went back to the other side, pulled out the rest of the holiday stuff, the Christmas and the Thanksgiving stuff and da-da-da-da. And when we were finished with that project, which really isn't quite finished because there's still a couple of boxes I need to go through, but I know what's in them. Yeah. The comment was made that, you know, I feel a lot lighter.
Mm-hmm.
I feel basically because of the release of those things, whether they're things you're keeping, you have now found them. I forgot I had this.
Yeah.
Or I can't believe I still have this. It's going. Or,
yeah.
Wow, I don't need this anymore. I'm going to see if I can find someone who could use it better than me.
Yeah.
So what you're talking about is doing that, but on the inside.
Exactly.
Going through
and
those boxes.
It's that exact, we call it clearing out.
Yeah.
That shifts the outer world. I want to give you an example before we have to go.
Yes.
I went and I did a lot of deep inner work in Guatemala at the beginning of this year, and I went and sat on my teacher's porch for 12 days, and we spent 5 to 8 hours a day in inner work, processing and clearing out. And before I came back, I said to myself and my sister in Antigua, I said, man, I just realized something. She said, what? I said, all that work? She said, yeah. I said, I got to take that all home with me now, and I got to go home and face all of my insecurities. I just know it. I did not know what that meant or how it was going to present itself. But when I got home, my husband, who had not been drinking, he's an alcoholic, who had not been drinking for 12 years, had been drinking the whole time I was gone. And there was, I mean, everything that could push my insecurity buttons happened the week I got back.
Wow.
And instead of responding, reacting the way that I would have before, I did not look at it as an external thing. I knew before I got home that I would have to face my insecurities. And so when my insecurities were presented before me, I knew that it wasn't about what I was seeing. You know, it wasn't about my husband drinking. It was about what I believed about that, about how that made me feel insecure. And so I would go into feeling insecure, and I would take all the training that I had on the porch with me into insecurity and clear the patterns of insecurity that I had been carrying around that I didn't even know was there. And within 2 weeks' time, my husband stopped drinking and started working out without me ever discussing his drinking with him. And then I found the pattern that I'd been living with masculinity in my life. And my son, who I hadn't talked to in 2 years, just showed up on my porch a month ago and wanted to rekindle his relationship with his mother. And instead of reacting with distrust like I had with him in the past, I reacted because that was insecurity. I reacted from a secure place in knowing that this is what this moment needs right now. It needs this woman and this child to reconnect,
yeah,
and do whatever it needs to do. And now, you know, and the shifts that have happened within the living of this life, just from doing that kind of stuff, have been phenomenal. But you can't go inside and say, I'm going to shift this because I want the outside world to look like this.
Right, right, right.
That's not how it works. It's not wishful thinking. This is being utterly, courageously honest with yourself.
Yeah.
And sitting with that at that deep level of honesty, looking at the things that have been terrifying you for a very long time and realizing that they're part of the Maya, that they're not true, that you've been living lies. And it's that living that has created the out of integrity feeling and the chaos and all of that. And that's when the outer world realigns to the inner world.
In the last few minutes that we have here on the program, who is Rev Shar?
She's nobody. She's just a flashlight sometimes.
Okay.
I tell everybody I'm just a flashlight. I have this ability since I got here to be able to illuminate things that other people can't. And I don't know why, and I don't know how. And I quit seeking to find out who I am. Instead, now I'm just whatever is this right here in this moment is who I am. I could say that I have, you know, I have a congregation, I run a chapel, I have a radio show, and I have a business, but none of those things are really who I am. That's just how I get to play here.
Mm. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing?
Helping people love themselves and life. If I can help one person fall in love with life, then I'm ecstatic for the rest of mine.
And how powerful are we as human beings?
We're as powerful as we want to be, and we are as unpowerful as we want to do. I think as human beings, one of our biggest lessons is to learn what power is. And all power is transformation. It's the energy to transform. And when we feel powerless, it means we don't feel we have the energy to change things. And when we feel empowered, we feel like we have the energy to change everything.
Rev Shar, how do we get a hold of you?
You can get a hold of me at nrgworx@aol.com. If you want to email me, if you want to follow me on Facebook under RevShare, one word, Schwengler, S-C-H-W-E-N-G-L-E-R, or type in Energy Works on Facebook and you'll find my business and my personal site. And you can look up Lucid Waking on A-Zen.fm. I'm there all the time. Just type in RevShare Schwengler on Google. You get about 15 pages of me.
Fantastic. RevShare, thank you so much for joining us on the program. This has been fun.
Thank you, Richard. It was great.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.